There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 995, June 5th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Today we have running of the bulls in Barcelona, Indy cars do the locomotion in Motown, talk with Grand Prix winner becomes elementary. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, El Matador of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max continues his domination. Mercedes upgrades rewarded. Has Aston Martin peaked? Let's hope not. And Will Power says, F1 is a joke. Well, and this week's interviews, IndyCar drivers Liram Zendeli and Louis Foster. Nas will have all the details, and that'll come up later in the program. And let's not forget, folks, we need your contributions to keep this program up in the cloud. So please click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. A busy weekend with Racing. I'm glad you must have enjoyed every minute of it.
Thank you, sir. It was one of the best weekends of my existence. Went to Detroit IndyCar race. Great experience, great city, great interview opportunities and contacts made. And as far as action on the other side of the pond is concerned, and what you just said is the first I've heard, at least from Will Power, that Formula One is a joke. You know, I'm always amused when people who don't come to America but go to Europe try to get into Formula One, could not even hack it in Formula 3, let alone Happy Dos or Formula 2, and then they want to piss on their ultimate dream. But, you know, to each his own, the man has the right to his opinion, which is fine. But Formula One is pinnacle of motor racing. It's not a joke. That's what I say. Do you concur?
Absolutely. We have Fernando. They don't.
Exactamundo. Now, speaking of Fernando, we had two Mercedes drivers on the podium. I thought the change has come, but then I saw who won the race and the margin, and I said, maybe not. I guess Engelbert Humperdinck was right, Mr. Rogers. Blue Spanish eyes, teardrops are falling from your machismo eyes. And I've never been very close to Fernando, so I'm not sure if he has blue eyes, but that's another story. Carlito tried to wipe the tears off by trying to grab the lead going into turn one, which was very impressive, but Max had other ideas. Winning idea, I should say. Both Sainz, this is interesting, Mr. Rogers, the power of Max. Both Sainz Jr. and 7.5-time world champion started on soft tires, but were still unable to run with Max on mediums. Max has now become Al Davis of Formula One. The competition must go down and go down hard. Win number 40, one short of Ayrton Senna. Championship hopes of his challenger and teammate have been smashed like a Guadalajara piñata, which is more upscale than Tijuana piñata, so I'm giving credit to Checo. Championship number 3 coming soon, way before Yas Marina, all this at the age of 25. And this brings us to, now we present question of the day, brought to you by Pringles. Is Lewis Hamilton still the only lucky driver, or does he have company now? What say you, host with the most?
Well, Lewis has been very, very lucky. Are you kidding? I mean, look at his whole career. One of the luckiest guys in the world, for sure. But it looks like it's amazing what side pods will do to a Mercedes. All of a sudden, they get rid of those zero pods and put on side pods, and they're on the podium. So they probably have a lot of performance still left in the bag. And it was very bizarre. Strange race.
Yes, sir. 2023, 2024, 2025, and 2016. I'm sorry, 2026. There will be a power change and a regime change, and he will have his own version of W13, powered by a Ford EcoBoost engine. And we'll see how many races he wins that time. But, you know, that's a few years down the road. Right now, I'm going to enjoy his third, fourth, and fifth world championships. Thoroughly deserving. And if the competition can't get anything done, that's not his fault. But, sir, here is more excitement. And on this side of the pond, Moore was in Motown for the Detroit IndyCar race. And, Mr. Rogers, you really deserve a new Kimowa cap, not a Ferrari sunglasses, Kimowa cap. Friday evening, I was on my way to catch a big old jetliner to Detroit when I got a text from the host, and this really shows him how the importance of text in today's world. The host saying in the text, John Watson is in Detroit, and that was music to my ears. Watty and I have been in touch since our 2019 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix meeting. Very happy to say, as soon as I got your text, I sent him an email, and he quickly responded saying we can do the interview on Saturday. So finally, we got a biggie for our special 1000 podcast, which is coming up. I think it will be the first week of July. So keep up the good work to lay host. And Mr. Rogers, when the F1 Weekly auditors are out to lunch at Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, please feel free to add another zero to your already 10-figure salary.
Gracias.
You are very welcome, senor. So this was very good. And you know what happened is I had to get in touch again, courtesy of you, with Mr. Merrill Kane. And he says to me, where are you? I said, I'm in the media room. And he said, okay, let me reach out to him. Let me see where he is. Then he sends me a text message. Can you come down and meet me here? So I did, and he took me in his golf cart. And the best part was, you know, this was in the Penske hospitality, and I told Merrill, man, this is the first time I'm entering Roger Penske territory. And so I sat down with John, and I said, no, Mr. Watson, I know you're very busy. Can we do at least 15 minutes? He says, I'm not as busy as you may think, so don't worry about 15 minutes. And this thing dragged down to 45 minutes. Fantastic conversation. He was very, very nice and talked about a lot of stuff and drivers and personalities. So this is a great conversation. I thank him and also Merrill and Mr. Rogers for their help in making this happen. Shall we do a quickie on Collie now, sir?
Yes, Mr. De La Rosa.
Thank you. Charles Leclerc, oh boy, top jockey for Prancing Horse out in Q1. Last year, he started from pole position at this race. Amazing. Only driver slower than him was Williams rookie Logan Sargeant. Hamilton was fastest and Max ninth in Q1. But we all knew this was going to change. Man, the way Ferrari team is going, looks like they're going to go to the Mariana Trenches, and Mercedes sooner or later will have a winning car. Let's see what happens. Q2, Checo goes in kitty litter on his own. LCH goes on the grass courtesy of his teammate. He makes it to Q3. George and Perez do not. At the top, normal service restored as totally expected. Max, Norris and Sainz Jr. top three moving into Q3. Now Q3 we had a big surprise. Wow, I was shocked. Max on pole, number 24 of his career, but first one in Spain. Now, I'm sure you remember, it was in Spain that he won his first race on his debut with Red Bull. And I wondered if the team made a radio announcement. Good evening, Mr. Kvyat. Second, local mini machismo Carlito, 0.46 seconds slower than Max. And that was pretty much the race over for me. Norris qualified third, sharing row two with Pierre Gasly, Hamilton completing the Fast Five. Both Aston Martins in top 10, and for the first time this season, Lance Stroll out-qualified Machismo. Lance was sixth on the grid and Alonso ninth. Once again, Nico Hülkenberg was the faster Haas F1 and Oscar Piastri qualified 10th. Anything surprise you in qualifying, sir?
Well, a lot of things surprise me. It's the Aston Martin's lack of pace and Lance Stroll actually out-qualifying Fernando.
What is the official reason that Machismo was not competitive on home soil, which really surprised the hell out of me?
In Q1, he damaged the floor on the car, and it was not repairable. He couldn't, even on soft, he had no pace.
So he will be Mas Rapido in Canada?
Your favorite racetrack, yes.
You know who got his first victory there?
I was talking about my favorite Sicilian, who cries a lot. José C.
I was talking about Ricciardo. Oh, yeah. Yes. New motivation. Yes. I think it was Fernando Alonso's one-time teammate also won there, but we will see. Okay, sir, race. Winner, Max Verstappen from pole position to the checkered flag. Surprise, surprise. Smooth as a sail on the Bahama Bay. He must be loving his Shumi and Hemi Halcyon days. Teammate is now, I don't want to say totally muted, because I'm convinced Perez will win a race or two still. Obviously, you cannot fault Max for being overflowing with talent, but it would be nice if there was a Machismo or his 2007 teammate in the same team to keep the tradition of cage rattling going on and on, race by race, and we all know how much we love that. Max played the complete Isaac Hayes LP shaft by setting the fastest lap also.
Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man?
In seven races so far, Max has 5 wins and 2 second place finishes. He is leading the championship with 170 points. Nice cushion of more than 2 wins over his teammate Checo on 117 points. And that's a 53 point advantage. Next time in Canada, Max will be looking forward to give Red Bull their 100th Grand Prix win. He has already delivered 40 of those, and he's the most successful driver for Red Bull. The Orange Army of Raging Bull equals no stopping for Verstappen. And Toto Wolff said it best, and I quote, "I think Verstappen is just on a different level. It pisses me off to say that, but that is the reality," end quote. And sir, I just made a note of something that I would like to share with you about the Uber domination that Red Bull is experiencing, and I would say very deservedly so, because we do enjoy, here it is, laps led after the first 7 races of the season. Total laps led by Red Bull 401, which equals to 96.2% of the laps. Wow. And the second close, I mean the team in second, is Mercedes. They have led 2.6% in total of 11 laps. How pathetic is that? And Ferrari, the most successful team in Formula One history and motor racing history, after 7 races, they have led 2 laps. And probably when Max came into pits for new tires. Does that grab your attention, Senor?
It's amazing, but domination, we've seen it before. We will see it again. It is part of the Formula One heritage.
Absolutely. Okay, now we move on to second place, or as they say, the first loser, and I'm sure you will be happy to hear that name, Lewis Hamilton. How time and circumstances change. Not too long ago, winning a race seemed like a birthright. The Mercedes gravy train was running smoothly on Mussolini's schedule. Then at the Yas Marina platform in 2021, it was derailed by a bullet train. Today, getting on the podium is once in a blue moon opportunity. The winning beam has not been seen since Saudi Arabia 2021. As refreshing as the podium in Spain is, LCH was still 24 seconds behind Max in Barcelona. This was second podium of the season for him since Australia, where he finished in the same place But on a positive note, this was Lewis's 11th podium in Barcelona, which is very, very impressive. He is now fourth in the championship with 87 points. After the race, he said, and I quote, "As long as I've been racing here in Barcelona, if you are quick here, you should be good elsewhere," end quote. And I think he looked like somebody who was very happy this weekend. Do you see a comeback from Mercedes in the second half where they probably win as many races as Red Bull? Is that possible?
No, that's not possible, because if it was Red Bull with today's engine but not Max, very possible. Absolutely. But unfortunately, Max is the deciding factor.
That he is. Okay, sir. Third man on the podium, George Russell. First podium of the season and 10th of his career for the lad from King's Lynn. He is fifth in the championship with 65 points. And this was very interesting when he had a Nancy Sinatra moment in the race.
When I left the tears I cried, he thought were just the rain.
Sweat pouring from his hair, he thought was rain. Boy, George, he will have better days. And I was watching his interview after the race. He said what happened. He did not put all his hair under the balaclava, so some sweat was flowing down, and he thought it was rain. So that was. Did you think that was amusing, silly, or what?
I thought it was amusing.
Both Mercs on the podium mean they have now passed Aston Martin for second in the Constructors' Championship with 154 points compared to 132 for Green Machines. And of course, Red Bull leads with 287 points. Now we come to the last man who finished fourth, Sergio Perez. After the first four races, score was 2-2. In three races since then, all won by car from the other side of the garage. His championship hopes have now gone off-road. And we all know Red Bull does not provide towing service. Pierre Gasly and Daniel Kvyat are on standby as references. Checo is still hanging on to second in the championship, 117 points. But the green object in the mirror may be closer than he thinks. Ben, I'll tell you, if this guy does not finish, not winning the championship against Max is totally understandable, and it's not shameful if you don't win against Max as a teammate. I mean, you can never fault anybody not winning a championship against teammate Senna or Prost or Schumacher. But if he finishes third and Machismo or Lewis or George goes ahead, that will look very, very bad. What say you?
It will look terrible. And he'll be gutted inside.
Okay, completing the top five was Carlos Sainz Jr. Like teammate, he is lost in the fog of Fiorano or the mist of Maranello, or could be both. I do not feel a faster heartbeat for the prancing horse anytime soon. Apart from pedigree and history, all they are delivering to their drivers these days is mystery. Mystery of when they will have what Fisico's manager wanted, a winning car. Carlito is 6th in the championship with 58 points, 112 behind Max, and we are not even halfway through the season. So this is very, very sad for Scuderia Ferrari. The prancing horse may have left the barn after last year's championship season ended, but the real worry is who let the bulls out. Actually, it's only one bull that's on a stampede here. 6th. Oh, this is my favorite part. My boy Lollipop. Harbor lights were shining and the moon was in its high in October 1998 when he made his debut on the world stage. And what a charmed life Lance Stroll has. His employer puts no pressure on him to perform. Gee, I wonder why. And his kinder and gentler teammate wants to push him, but never on a Sunday. Gee, I wonder who could that be? If Chris Berman was covering F1 for ESPN, he would call Lance the Trustafarian Nightmare. But when all is said and done, Lance is 8th in the championship with 35 points. But don't tell Daddy where the teammate is. And here he is, 7th. Cat that has 9 lives. Gato de Machismo. Fernando Alonso. Hopes were very high. Rain in Spain will fall mainly on Red Bull, and local hombre will electrify the crowd with his first win in a decade. Even though it was dry heat, there was no Phoenix. But Machismo is still third in the championship with 99 points. Okay, let's do it this way. Who will win a race first this year? Machismo, Lewis, or George?
Lewis.
Lewis, you think, will win before Machismo?
Yes, I think Aston has peaked, and I believe that all of a sudden, the biggest problem with Aston Martin this year is the year that they begin the transition to their new facilities. And when you do that during a Formula One season, it disrupts a lot of things. So unfortunately, everything was going great. Now it's time to move into the new facility. You have to move the other crap out of the old facility. It's time consuming, and this will affect development. Trust me, even with billions and billions, you just can't help it. So it's sad, but Fernando will not get the win that he deserves this season.
I am very surprised you're saying this, because I thought nothing sticks on Teflon Don.
Well, things change, my friend. We are in 2023, and like I said, we're reaching the middle of the season, and things are changing. And like you said, now that Mercedes have put those upgrades, which are huge, this could put them over the cost cap. But they don't care, because they know the penalty for breaching the cost cap is wussy and simple and ridiculous. So why not breach a cost cap, keep Lewis happy, and they will sing Get Down Tonight.
Do a little dance. There you go. One thing they have going for them at Mercedes, it's a huge corporation. They have tremendous resources. You know, they've got a car factory, the Formula One factory. They got their own engine factory in Brixworth. And then, of course, the mothership in Stuttgart. Tremendous racing history and resources. So I agree with you that they have a lot more to catch up, and I think they will. But I'm still fairly confident that Machismo will find a way to win. I mean, that's what winners do. So let's see what happens. I think it's the first time in all these 15 years we are doing this podcast that I'm more positive on Machismo than you are. Things have changed. I guess you're right. Did you even notice that, Mr. Rogers?
I did notice it. Unfortunately, times, they are a-changing.
Yes. Okay, 8, Esteban Ocon. This was interesting. On lap 52, he did a shumi on Rubinho from Hungary, Oracena on Prost in Portugal, on, of all the people, the messiah of motorsports, our beloved El Machismo. Risky business, but as always, the Spanish wind cried, Nando. He not only survives, but comes ahead. Ocon is 9th in the championship with 25 points. 9th, this was interesting placing. Guan Yu Zhou for Alfa Romeo. He complained about potty mouth Yuki, and not surprisingly, the stewards listened to him and gave a 5-second penalty to the Japanese driver. And David Coulthard on his broadcast said he totally disagreed with the penalty. And I have to agree with him. You know, this kind of too many penalties. Do you think this penalty was justified, Senor?
No, not at all. Yuki was right. Coulthard is right. We have what we call F1 stewards run amok.
Yes, but don't tell Gunther Steiner. Okay, 10, Pierre Gasly, final point. Gasly and Esteban used to be fast friends when they were young. Today they are still fast, but not friends, just teammates. So far, the Monza Magic Man has not been able to do any trick on Hungarian Houdini. Gasly is 10th in the championship with 15 points. And now, guy who was supposed to be world champion about a year or two ago. 11th, finishing 11th and first out of points was a case of, here's a dime, call someone who cares, Charles Leclerc. After 7 races, he has only 1 podium finish this season from Baku. I am afraid he is fast becoming Machismo of Monaco. All that talent and no package, so no delivery. Now here's an idea to make everybody happy. I think Lawrence Stroll should buy an F1 championship trophy. These days anything and everything is for sale. Give it to his son and give his seat to Charles Leclerc. Charles Leclerc, teammate to Fernando Alonso. What can go wrong? Now, one thing interesting about this race, 2023 Spanish Grand Prix, Mr. Rogers, no safety car, no VSC, and no retirements in the race. Final thoughts from you on the race, sir?
Well, I do miss Latifi. You're right. Darn it. But yeah, I mean, like I said, this race was a little processional. And what's up with Logan Sargeant, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's not very good to see him struggling like this. Yeah, he's just not driving a Red Bull, but I think he needs to do a little bit better.
Yes, let's hope the American could maybe eat his Wheaties and make a bigger effort when he gets to America.
Yes. And, sir, what would an F1 race be without a penalty or fine? This time they dished out a 10,000 euro fine to Mercedes, and according to the rules, the physios were supposed to wait outside the cool-down room behind the podium until the ceremony has been completed. Apparently, they did not do that. Nobody is supposed, this is from the rule book, nobody is supposed to be in the designated park-from area once the cars arrive back, except for team mechanics, officials, and FIA pre-approved TV crews and photographers. So what is 10,000 euros for Mercedes-Benz, the billion-dollar behemoth from Germania?
Shall we, before we go into Motorsports Mondial, shall we invite Mr. Louis Foster from UK to the Palatial Studios, sir?
Absolutely. Cheerio.
Okay, thank you. Now, this is one serious racing talent, okay? He came to the US, crossed the pond last year, took part in Indy Pro Series, and that name has changed now. But it's two steps below IndyCar racing, and he just blew away everybody. It was very, very impressive. Now he has moved to Indy Lights, talk about name change, which is now called Indy Next. And first race in St. Pete, he qualified on pole. He's racing with Michael Andretti's team. Very, very talented. He has not won a race yet. He's not even in the top five in the championship as a... He went into the wall in St. Pete. He won. There were two races last weekend in Detroit. He was on pole for both of them. On the opening lap of the first race, he got spun around by another driver. So he's having some tough time, but the kid is very talented. And this interview took place a few weeks ago. And I hope our listeners enjoy this chit-chat with Mr. Louis Foster.
Okay, folks, I'm here with one very fast race car driver from jolly old England. Louis Foster, welcome to F1 Weekly and to the colonies. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thank you. Been a good day so far, so I can't complain.
Now, you had a tremendous season last year. Can you go two championships in the US in two rookie seasons?
I think that's the aim. I think it's definitely doable. Obviously, this year with a great team, Andretti. So far, our pace has been very strong, so I don't see a reason why not.
Jolly old England is the center of motor racing. How old were you when you got the racing bug?
I started karting at the age of 5.
As simple as that. Good. Okay, your dad, Nick, raced in British Touring Car Championship, series I've followed for a long, long time. Did you have any plans to go tin top racing before getting into single-seaters?
I think that was our initial plan, yeah. I think my first ever season racing in cars was in a junior, Genesis Junior, which was it's kind of a bit like a Mazda MX-5 tin top. And our plan was to stay in kind of that category of cars, really, but we were kind of forced into Formula 4 due to my age. I was too young to race anything else after Genesis Juniors. So we kind of got forced into single-seaters, really, and ever since then, I've enjoyed it massively, so we've just kind of stayed it, really.
Did your dad help you in driving coaching, or did you ever employ a driver coach?
When I first started off, my dad would help a little bit with things here and there. At this stage now, he's taking a bit of a backseat. He comes to all the race weekends. He's here this weekend. He mainly helps me more with kind of strategic stuff, mentality. He just thinks of things sometimes that I might not think of, and he's very, very useful still to this day. More on a mental side of things rather than the actual physical driving stuff.
You won races in British Formula 3 and Formula 4. Plus, you won a race in the Indian MRF Championship season. Was there a particular year or a season where you felt you developed the most as a racing driver?
I'd probably say last year, to be honest, in IndyPro. Obviously, it was my first ever championship win. But I think I learned a lot about myself, my driving, what I need to be able to be a fast driver from the team. Yeah, I definitely learned a lot that year. My engineer, John, was a very, very good engineer, and we worked really well together. So I would say last year I learned the most. Obviously, there's a lot. Every year you learn a lot as a junior driver. Every year's a massive learning curve. It's a bit like being in school, really, when you come up the ranks in single-seaters. It's a bit like being back in school. Every year you've got to learn massive amounts. Another year where I learned a lot was probably in Euroformula in 2021. That was quite a strenuous year with all the new challenges I faced that year.
Now, what was the main reason switching to this side of the pond and not continuing in European Formula 3 or Formula 2?
I mean, obviously, the racing here is amazing. I think the way that racing is done here is a lot more enjoyable and fun. I think the fan experience is a lot better out here. Quality of life is also quite a lot better. You know, I mean, I looked at IndyCar back in 2020 and saw it as a great opportunity for myself. I think Formula 1 nowadays is becoming more and more closed, and it makes it extremely difficult for drivers to get there. I think with America and the Road to Indy series and the way they have the scholarship money set up is something that no one else in the world is doing.
Now, before the season started last year, first time here in the US, you know, we have street races, road courses, ovals. What were your expectations? Did you think you can win the championship first time out?
Yeah, the aim was to win it at the end of the day. Obviously, we knew that street courses would have been, you know, difficult, and obviously ovals would have been the most difficult, but, you know, we entered it with an open mind and just did our best. But yeah, I think from the get-go, the plan's always been every year to win the championship.
Yeah, you were very impressive in most of the races. I did watch on the web all of them. How easy was adaptation to the oval racing?
Yeah, it's quite tricky at first. Obviously, it's something very new to every European driver. So, yeah, the first few test days I struggled a little bit, but once you get the hang of it, you can kind of start pushing more and more and more, and you get more comfortable with it. And once you get comfortable, you can be fast. So it was definitely tricky, but very enjoyable learning curve, very enjoyable.
What were the real points of all races that you did that made you very feel good about it? Does not have to be wins, but, you know, great performances.
Well, I mean, first one will be my oval win last year. Obviously, that was quite unexpected, first time at an oval and managed to win the race. So, yeah, that was quite a surreal moment for me last year. And then Toronto was also quite a special weekend for the team, especially their Canadian-based exclusive autosport. So, yeah, to get a double win on home soil for them was quite special.
And in terms of depth of winning is never easy, no matter where you go. In terms of depth of talent, do you see a huge difference between racing in America and Europe?
Not particularly, no. I think the standard of drivers is very strong in both. I think, you know, obviously there's a lot more Americans in America and there's a lot more Europeans in Europe, which makes sense. But I think the depth of all the driver skill is the same in any championship you race in the world. You know, the top drivers are always going to be within tens and hundreds. That's the same here, it's the same in America, it's the same in Europe, you know, it's the same everywhere. But yeah, it's definitely been tricky competition so far.
Now, we always ask drivers who come and race from other places, when you are here, what do you prefer, cheeseburgers or hot dogs?
Probably cheeseburgers, I'd say, yeah.
Okay, good. And if I may ask, where are you based, Indianapolis?
No, I'm based in California.
Where about?
I am based in Manhattan Beach, so about 10 minutes south of LAX.
Interesting, because our palatial studios are in Northern California, and I lived there for a long time. Okay, this year you started the Indy Next Series on a high note from pole position. Question is, are you ready to rumble in the Indy 500 next year?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's the aim. The aim is to be in IndyCar next year, to have a full seat, and to be racing IndyCar for the coming years. I mean, you know, it's, again, a development year with Andretti. Aims to win, aims to be in IndyCar next year full-time. And, yeah, I think, obviously, doing the Indianapolis 500 would be my, you know, be a bit of a dream for myself. So, yeah, that's obviously the aim.
And is your success being well reported and well covered in the English racing press?
I hope so. I don't read much about myself, but I'd hope so. I think, yeah. I mean, I'm with the BRDC Superstars program based out of the UK. So, yeah, obviously, people back home know exactly what I'm doing and how I'm getting on. So, it's nice to see some support from them.
Okay. Your favorite track here in the United States and also overseas?
Favorite track in the US would be probably Toronto. I like the street circuits a lot. And then favorite track in Europe or overseas or elsewhere outside America? Probably Hungaroring.
Now it rains quite a bit in jolly old England. How good are you in the wet?
We'll have to wait for a rain race and wait and see. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I spent a lot of my years in the rain, so I'd like to say I'm pretty decent. Yeah.
Okay, our favorite Formula One question is: will Lewis Hamilton get championship number 8 before Alonso gets championship number 3? What say you?
To be honest with you, like, I don't think either of those two are going to happen. But if we're going to have to play that, then I would say probably Hamilton 8 before Alonso 3.
When you were growing up, did you have a racing hero?
I guess my dad, really. No, there's certain Formula One drivers that I watched and liked, but I wouldn't call them heroes. But yeah, I mean, my dad has mainly inspired majority of the things I do in my life, so probably him.
Okay. Will you please tell our listeners a little bit about Louis Foster, the man, not the racing driver, your taste in music and food, and any of the sports you follow apart from motorsports?
Yeah, so I sports I follow. I like combat sports, so I watch MMA, UFC, boxing, whatever. I like basketball. That's the one American sport that I actually watch. The rest I don't really watch, to be honest. I'm not a massive football fan, as in like soccer football, British football. I don't really watch that, which surprises a lot of people when I talk to them. And then favorite foods? I eat a plethora of different foods, to be honest. I don't really have one particular food I like, but Italian's always good, so Italian, I guess.
Anything you want to tell about yourself, and okay, that you can tell about your social media also?
Yeah, apart from that, I'm just kind of a normal guy. Obviously, train quite hard for racing. That takes up a lot of my free time, is training, and staying well, eating well, and sleeping well, and training well. All that together to maximize the performance in the car. So yeah, that's pretty much me, I guess.
Thank you very much,
Louis. Thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Thank you very much, Nasser. So we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Louis Foster, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And for MM, we go back to Barcelona for Formula 2. Sprint race on Saturday, win number 3 of the season for Mercedes junior Frederik Vesti from Denmark. Theo Pourchaire from your Shangri-La, France, was second. Sunday's feature race was won by Ferrari junior Oliver Bearman. I think he's the next big star from UK, just in the same mold as Lewis or George Russell. He's very young and he's very good. This is his first year in Formula 2. Enzo Fittipaldi was second. In the championship, Frederik Vesti leading 110 points, second Pourchaire on 99 points. There are several very talented second and third year drivers in the series this season, including Jack Doohan, Theo Pourchaire, Frederik Vesti, and Dennis Hauger from Norway. Dennis Hauger, I believe, is in the Red Bull program. Their dishes will be done if the championship is won by a rookie. Olli Bearman is the danger lurking in the woods. He is currently fourth in the championship with 70 points. Formula 3 Saturday sprint race won by Zach O'Sullivan. Sunday's feature race winner was local driver Josep Maria Marti. In the championship, Brazilian Gabriel Bortoleto is leading with 92 points and Marti from Viva España is second on 68 points. And Montoya's son, Sebastian, is in this series. He's competitive, but he is not in the top three in the championship at this stage. Well, let's see how it works out. And speaking of Sebastian, I'm very pleased to say Sebastian Weldon, one of the sons of late Dan Weldon, over the weekend, he just won his first motor race, which was in the Skip Barber series at Virginia International Raceway. So I'm going to watch that race on YouTube. And he is being, both the brothers are being helped by Michael Andretti's team. So that is nice.
Okay, sir, now we come to the main event in Detroit. You know, the race moved to downtown from what was known as Belle Isle. Spanish success in the streets of Motown as Alex Palou sings a winning tune from pole position for Chip Ganassi Racing. Did you watch any of this race, sir?
I did watch this race. At first, you know, I thought the track was a little funky, a little narrow, a little bumpy. I know it's a new track, and the pits, they were split in half. I'd never seen anything like it. It was creative, but they made it happen. And after a few cautions, big bummer for our friend Callum Elott. It was good racing. It was a lot of fun to watch. A lot of bitterness at the end, you know, people going and crying, and Grosjean hitting the wall. It was great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed going to this event. Media parking at RenCen, short for Renaissance Center, was very convenient. In less than 5 minutes, a walk, you are in the paddock. So many thanks to the media people for giving us credentials, for which we are very thankful and appreciative. Now we come to Indy Next, previously known as Indy Lights. This is the Formula 2 of U.S. open wheel racing. Doubleheader in Detroit. Heartbreak and redemption for California driver Nolan Siegel.
Hi, I'm Nolan Siegel, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
He was on his way of having a double shot this weekend. In Sunday's race one, his drive shaft broke on the final lap within striking distance of the checkered flag, and victory went to another homegrown talent, but from the right course, Reese Cole. His father is a lawyer in Miami, FLA. But Siegel did win the second race on Sunday with authority, so that's good for him. Now, the only champion in Formula W Series, Ms. Jamie Chadwick, who was racing in this series with Michael Andretti's team, is having a very challenging time so far this season. And even in the parking garage, her car was parked next to my car, which was interesting. I don't want to talk about how she's doing, but she's having a very challenging time. And to be honest with you, I think people who put her there, they're doing a disservice to her. That's just my opinion. What say you?
I agree. I understand they're trying to be open-minded in giving the young lady a chance because she does have some talent. The problem is you have to know your limitations. She needs to speak up. Driving against a sea of men is not going to do her career any good at all.
Okay, sir. Now, supermarket checking out. This supermarket chain in Netherlands, Jumbo, or maybe the natives call it Jumbo, is ending their sponsorship of Max and Dutch Grand Prix. And they have been with Max since he entered single-seater racing in 2014. Last year, their CEO stepped down after being accused of money laundering. And that will do your reputation no good. Next, we come to Achy Breaky Heart. After 6 years of lovey-dovey and lots of besame mucho, Carlos Sainz Jr. girlfriend has booked a room for him at the Heartbreak Hotel in Splitsville County. Good news is he has the money to buy himself a new car as big as a whale heading down Madrid Highway looking for Shaq Damour. Any comment on this? And by the way, now there are reports that this Colombian singer, Shakira, whatever the name is pronounced, she might be involved with your favorite driver, LCH. Did you hear that?
I saw it on the fake news that I see on the internet where you have so many weird things going on. And what about Rosberg? I mean, I guess Christian Horner had to snip him a little bit. He's saying strange things about a lot of people. He's pissing people off. I love it. That's why we love Formula One, Nasser.
What did Nico do?
Well, nothing. He was just doing his reporting, and I guess he knocked Perez, and Christian Horner was standing right next to him, and Christian Horner had to set him straight. So, I don't know.
Okay. And speaking of ladies, we have an update on Me Too. A commentator on Netflix, Drive to Survive, and I enjoy his work quite a bit, has been relieved of his Formula E duties following allegations of his inappropriate conduct towards women. And his name is Jack Nichols, and this is all over the news. He also commentates for BBC's coverage, radio coverage of Formula One. And this past weekend, he was missing in action. But, you know, Jack was man enough not to go on usual, I deny everything, and you need to speak to my attorney kind of stuff.
So he fessed up to it, and he's now singing one of our favorites. I'm sorry, so sorry. Okay, sir, that brings us to the second interview of the day. Are you ready?
At F1 Weekly, if you're not ready, you get fired. Out the door.
Yes. Okay, this conversation is with Mr. International, Lerim Zandelli. He is from Germany, and I will let him explain his international background. And this conversation took place a few weeks ago. I would like to thank him and wish him all the best. He raced in Europe, and now he's racing in Indy Pro Series, which I think is now called USF 2000 Pro Series. But people will understand what Indy Pro Series is. So, Lerim, thank you for your time, and I hope our listeners enjoy this chit-chat. Okay, folks, I'm here with young talent, Lerim Zandelli. Lerim, welcome to America. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Thank you. Not the greatest day. I mean, the day itself pretty good, but our race wasn't the best. Gotta improve a lot, some stuff.
Overall, how is your American racing adventure going so far this season?
There's quite a lot of surprising good stuff. All the drivers are pretty cool with each other. It's pretty fun to drive with them. The tracks are pretty different to Europe. I had to adapt to it, but I'm really enjoying it. It's a lot more chill, but still on the track, everyone's fighting so hard. It's just a different vibe, which I really like.
Now you said tracks are different. Apart from ovals, what are the main differences that you see in American tracks and American style of racing? Obviously, a lot of yellow flags here and cautions. How do you see their situation?
I mean, most of the tracks, they're very old school. They wouldn't have a lot of runoffs, not very big curves. Like, if you go off, you're off in the grass or in the gravel. The tracks are very bumpy. I mean, with Sebring, I've never experienced such a bumpy track. I mean, Indy road course here was pretty smooth, but still a pretty old school track with the walls and the grass and everything. And that's I think, pretty much for all the racetracks here in America.
Okay. In 2018, you won the German Formula 4 with 10 wins. What is even more impressive is that you beat Liam Lawson, Enzo Fittipaldi, and Frederick Vesti for the title. Tell us a little bit about the season and your best memories from that season.
It was just a perfect season. Even, I think I had a DNF back then, and also I had one drive-through penalty, which wasn't a drive-through, which could have gave me even two more wins. Was very dominant, but I had a great team behind me. Was just, I don't know, I didn't really talk a lot about the car, about data. I just turned up there on every track, and we were quick straight away. It was just the, how you say, like, between the car and me and the team, was just perfect. I don't want to say it was driving by itself, the car. I mean, I did my job, but still wasn't kind of not difficult for me.
So you're like the German Kimi Raikkonen, not talking, but doing a lot of winning.
Yeah, I mean, back then, for sure. Today, stuff, things are a bit more difficult. I think I had a great run to Formula 3, went up, had a difficult season with Charouz, but then was tried and winning races, pole positions. I think I was the best qualifier in the field, just a bit unlucky with some crashes I had, but I fought for the championship. From there on, money is just an issue. From there on, it's just, yeah, I couldn't really race properly anymore.
Now, the German Formula 4 Championship, you were with a team called US Racing. People would think it was an American team. Will you please tell our listeners who the S stands for, and is he a cool guy?
The team was, I don't know if it's still, but owned by Ungar and Schumacher. That's why US. I mean, Ralf Schumacher, the brother of Michael. And he's really chilled. He's really cool. If you see him from outside, you would think he might not be open to talk to a lot of people, you know, not meaning in an introvert way, he's totally extrovert, but still, Ralph is really so funny. If you really meet him, you just enjoy being around him, because he's gonna say something which will bring you to love. So yeah, really cool guy.
Yeah, I once met him and did an interview with him, and you know, his reputation is like Montoya, very difficult,
but he was extremely polite and nice to me, so I have very good memories of Ralf Schumacher. Okay, you are based in Germany. What part of Germany are you in? And your family background is from Albania. Is there any racing track or karting facilities in Tirana? I'm assuming your family is from Tirana?
Well, I live close to Düsseldorf. I live in Bochum in Germany, which is quite close to the border of Netherlands. And yeah, my parents, they're actually from Macedonia, but we are from Albanian heritage. So, I mean, there's history about Macedonia and Great Albania.
Alexander the Great.
Yeah, there's so much history. If I start talking about this, it's going to be too long. But yeah, they're from, let's say, the Albanian part of Macedonia. Well, North Macedonia in Skopje, from a small town there. And no, but in Albania, they're just building a racetrack. There's going to be the Automoto Park they're building in close to Elbasan. This is like 20 minutes from Tirana, the capital city of Albania. And that's going to be the first ever racetrack, actually, in Balkany. If you don't count Turkey, I don't know if you count Turkey as Balkan, but...
No, I don't think so.
No, okay, then it's going to be the first one on the Balkany.
Yeah, interesting. And are you like a famous guy there these days?
I used to be, kind of, yeah. I mean, when I drove...
National hero.
When I drove Formula 3 and I had my first wins, and then meeting the Prime Minister, meeting big stars. I had a big push of the Albanian, famous Albanian people. I mean, celebrities like Bebe Reja following me, or the father of Dua Lipa. That's pretty cool. But then it went a bit silent around, because I didn't have the money anymore to race in Formula 2, and I had to stop, and I didn't race for like 1.5 years. So, and I'm not the guy that posts a lot, you know, makes big drama out of himself. Like, you know, if I'm not going to race, I'm not going to post anything, you know. And that's why I think people still know me. But
you need to have lunch with Kim Kardashian.
Lunch?
She'll tell you how to promote yourself.
Oh, yeah, I don't need that.
Okay, no, I'm sure you will. I've been following your career for a few years, so you know, and I'm sure you will do well here. Okay, later this month you will race at an oval, I am guessing for the first time. How big of a challenge is it for you, or do you think it will be like learning just another road circuit?
It's kind of just another circuit, but the only thing you need to take care of on an oval is if you crash, the car is gone. So if you have a crash there, it's gonna be probably $60,000-$80,000 crash, and that hurts. So, but then you shouldn't be thinking of that doing the oval. And the crazy part about the oval is everyone's gonna be probably within a tenth. The top 10 is gonna be probably within a tenth. So every small mistake will cost a lot.
The decision you, for my next question, decision you made was very good, but the question is, you have a lot of racing experience, including Formula 2 and 3. What made you decide to race in the series you are in now and not go straight into Indy next?
Budget, honestly. Also, I got to learn the tracks. I kind of have only this shot, so I thought coming here, learning the tracks, and ideally also win the championship to get the fundings for the Indy next, that would be, let's say, the dream way. I mean, nothing's gonna work out as you wish always, but still, I gotta learn the racetracks, the tires, the people around me before I go into the big. I mean, I have a lot of experience, but still, I'm kind of a rookie here. But yeah, I think the biggest, not I think, but yeah, the biggest issue was the budget. If I had the budget to go to Indy next, I would have gone to Indy next.
And this year, you know, everybody wants to win. Who do you expect to be your main challengers for the championship?
That's a long story. I mean, I feel like right now, the one with the best engine is going to win the championship. I don't want to put down any driver here. Everyone's really good. It's a very great level, and I really enjoy driving with everyone. I mean, my teammates are very quick. Miles Rowe is very quick. Dear Orlando. These guys, they're really quick, and everyone can win. I think like the top 7 or 8 of the championship can win races and can win the championship. But as I feel like, and I'm, let's say, on the down part of this engine story, is the engines are just way too apart from each other. So, and as a driver, you're not gonna make a half a second difference on a racetrack. You might be a tenth or two quicker, but if someone's like 3 or 4 tenths up on the engine, then what you gonna do?
Okay, what was the first Formula One race you went to, and what do you remember most from that day?
I think the first Formula One race I appeared was when I drove Formula 4 that season when I won in 2018 in Hockenheim. That was the first time Formula 4 was together with Formula 1. Yeah, that was the first time.
Anything stands out for you from the sound of cars and the atmosphere? Or you were just involved in your stuff?
Honestly, I was just taking care of my stuff. I didn't even watch the race this weekend. But the atmosphere is great. But also, I have to say, the IndyCar atmosphere is pretty great. It's quite similar, I have to say. I feel like here they try to do a bigger show, kind of. Well,
I think we saw that in Miami.
Yeah, in America they do great shows. it's a big thing. Motorsport here is a big thing. But I mean, in F1 as well, it's the highest level of motorsport. So the atmosphere there is going to be great.
Will you be here at the track for the Indy 500?
I think so, yeah.
I would highly recommend.
I mean, I think that's something you want to experience. How many people are coming? 400,000 probably over the weekend. It's going to be very tight. It's going to probably be a mess here and there with traffic and stuff. But I think I want to experience that, yeah.
No, you should. It's very well organized. They've been doing this for over 100 years. And I was here last year. And let me tell you, the last 10, 15 laps of the Indy 500, I have not seen intensity in motor racing anywhere like that. So I hope you do it. Okay, now, your favorite sports team outside motorsports is Bayern Munich. Question is, does the name Gerd Müller mean anything to you?
Yeah, sure. He's a legend. But I'm not a very big... I mean, I watch football here and there, like, if there's the World Cup or the European Cup, how you call it, you know, some Champions League finals, stuff like that. But I'm not really someone who is watching Bundesliga every day. I kind of just got into Bayern Munich because when I was 5 years old, my parents gifted me a Bayern Munich wallet, which I had for like 5 years or something. So yeah, and then I really liked the combination of Robin and Ribery. Well, we called it Robbery back then, and yeah, that's how I decided to be a Bayern Munich fan.
Okay, good. Okay, your favorite racing driver is Lewis Hamilton. The burning question is, will Lewis Hamilton get championship number 8 before Fernando Alonso gets championship number 3? What say you?
I really believe in Mercedes that at some point they suddenly gonna dominate again. I don't know why, it's just my feeling. I might be wrong, but I feel like they've been trying something which just didn't work, and they will come back. And I believe in Lewis having definitely the potential. I mean, I don't want to talk about 2021, if that was the right choice or not. I mean, as a Lewis Hamilton fan, you would guess what I say, but...
I cannot, so I want to hear it from you.
That was his 8th one. That was definitely
absolutely
championship,
yeah.
Number 8.
You know, when a race director does not follow his own rules and regulation, yeah, he should be kicked out.
I don't know about that. I'm not too much into it. I mean, he's also under pressure. You gotta say, everyone has his own pressure on him. You know, at the end, it's a decision which is made within milliseconds. And he might even know it was his wrong decision, but people, we are human. We do wrong decisions and we have to live with it. And I mean, not even Lewis is talking about this anymore. So I think we all understand that stuff like that happens in life.
Yes, and sun always comes up next day. I greatly appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Wish you all the best. Finally, we have listeners all over the world. Will you please tell our listeners how they can follow your career, your social media, your website?
I'm most active on Instagram. Yeah, basically, just follow me on Instagram, liram.zandelli. And I'm not the super influencer active guy, but I post the most important stuff. Like, you will know when my race weekends are, or if I switch series, or whatever is happening in my life, I'm going to post it and you're going to see it.
Dankeschön.
Bitte schön.
Very nice talking to you.
Thank you so much. Lirim,
thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. We move forward with famous last words, and you were talking about Nico Rosberg. Martin Brundle has dropped a damn buster on Checo after Monaco. He said, and I quote, "Sergio would be better off making sure he finishes second and accepting the genius of Verstappen, and then maximize the dates when he delivers his own special magic, such as Singapore last year and Baku this season," end quote. First of all, I totally agree with what he said. I have a feeling Sergio will say about Brundle what he said about the race.com after winning the Singapore Grand Prix last year. Do you remember that?
Please refresh my memory.
Let's just put it this way. They probably said what Brundle had said, something like that, comparing him to his teammate. And after he won, he got on the team radio and said, you know, the nice words about the race.com, which I thought, you know, gave the race.com exposure to millions and millions of people. So they must have been very happy about it.
I would have been happy, too, if he had mentioned F1Weekly.com. That's the way it goes.
Yes. Well, maybe you can say something about negative about Machismo, and he may come and... Clark Rogers! Ah!
Gracias.
Well, you know, you're a man of class and culture, right? Yes. Okay, sir, now we come to the last lap. Some final thoughts. Once upon a time, there was a knock on the door at Honda Racing Engines in Sakura, Japan. The Western Union man had a telegram from McLaren man Zach Brown. Message was, your services and GP2 engines are no longer required. Well, Honda called U-Haul in UK and transported their hardware and software to Toro Rosso in Faenza, Italy, and further evaluation for mothership in Milton Keynes. Honda pumped a lot of pain down in Woking, and now someone else is reaping the benefits. McLaren also missed the Audi boat. I think McLaren will see winning days in IndyCars and Formula E and other series that they are embarking on long before they see winning ways in Formula One. As Leo Sayer said in a song, it's not easy when the road is your driver, and when you put Max behind the wheel, the door to winning ways is shut and sweet memories will die. And sir, with that we come to Musical Mondial. F1 Circus went to Barcelona, so we bring some music from Señor Sarasate of Spain. This is a very famous tune, one of my favorites, called Cigana Weisen, which is German for Gypsy Ways, as performed by the orchestra of James Last. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy. Adios, till we meet again behind palatial walls next week.